later on.
All right, good morning, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are gathered here November 4th, Wednesday, 10 a.m. on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for our regularly scheduled Public Service Commission meeting, and I will call this meeting to order. Well, we don't have a real long agenda, but it is an exciting agenda, and so I won't offer any really significant opening comments other than to say we are approaching the time of year again for another NARUC meeting. Dale Wetzel asked me what NARUC stands for on the very first news conference when I was appointed. And I still struggle to say what NARUC stands for. But it is the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners. It's not very intuitive. And there are a number of good events going on down in Texas for this discussion or for that meeting. I will be meeting with the American Gas Association to talk to them about some of their efforts and their work to collect policy measures that other states are taking to expand natural gas distribution to rural areas, areas where it isn't necessarily cost-effective for the service to expand on its own. So there's an interim committee meeting that is examining that, and I am going to be funneling whatever information I gain from the American Gas Association towards that committee and to help advance that issue. People struggle to see the extensive availability of natural gas in North Dakota with the Bakken resources so close, and communities that are still close to being economical but just not quite there, and it's a really big deal for economic development. These communities cannot compete without natural gas service, and so this is an issue that I'll be working through some of my neighbor connections to try to get some good information from what other rural states who struggle with the same thing are doing, and maybe there's something that we can apply here to North Dakota. So stay tuned for information on that to follow. Mr. Christman, any opening comments from you?
I don't have any opening comments, except I'll say that many decades ago, it's too bad that the people at NARUC didn't have some people like the U.S. Congress apparently has, where they come up with those wonderful acronyms that come out to to be a meaningful word that goes along with the bill and that sort of thing. And it seems
like, heat.
Seems like somebody could have come up with something better than NARUC, but it is what it is.
It could be power.
People organizing willful, okay.
Willful energy resources, yes.
Nothing more.
All right.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. When you started your comments about this is a big week, I thought you were referring to opening deer on Friday.
Oh, of course.
So, but I will step aside this year since I didn't get drawn for my deer tag that Commissioner Christman, I think by default, will win the big buck contest again this year. Although he still has to bring home a buck of some size to qualify.
Does he have to wear UND attire after he does that?
All in favor?
I think I.
So the anyway, the only thing I would just
confident in my odds.
Fair enough. I appreciate your comments about NARUC, Julie. The ironically, just yesterday, in my role as the chair of the Clean Coal Committee, we finalized the trip to North Dakota on December 10th for my friends in the media. But the Department of Energy allocated $100,000 to NARUC to bring commissioners to coal states that have new type of technologies and projects to see. So putting together a group of commissioners from around the country to come up to North Dakota, come in December 9th, go tour GRE on the 10th to look at their dry finding, stop by the Lignite Council and get an update on the alum cycle that, of course, strips out the CO2 for other things. And then I think one of the other trips we're going to plan is to the National Lab on CO2 recovery. So, we have to cover the waterfront back home in the state. There's no question about it. That's our priority. But I think that us playing a role in our national organization does a lot of things for our state outside the borders, which actually I think helps some of the national energy policy, because hoping to bring in commissioners from non-coal states that maybe have different viewpoints about what coal does and doesn't do, and let them see what the mine remediation looks like. Let them see what our CO2 projects are doing so they can become an advocate for coal as well as wind and natural gas. So I'm looking forward to that. But that'd be, I guess, all my opening comments, or then I'll wait till our December early meeting to see how Commissioner Crisman fares with his. Remember, cell phones cannot be used in the taking or scouting of animals, just so you know.
Keep that in mind.
Okay, we have a number of items on the consent agenda. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, I have one item in my portfolio. I move the commission deem complete the applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit, conditioned on receiving at least 10 business days prior to the public hearing in this case, copies of the environmental and cultural studies and location information concerning the portion of the project that is located within the proposed Senex Fargo terminal. I further move the commission issue a notice of filings and public hearing in NuStar Pipeline Operating Partnership LP 8-inch refined products pipeline, Cass County, citing application case number PU-15-674.
Second.
Yes, you heard it right. This is a pipeline in Cass County. We get to go east for a pipeline hearing. We'll set the date and time for this hearing in the admin portion of our meeting. But NuStar Pipeline Operating Partnership has filed applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for the location of approximately 7.3 miles of 8-inch diameter refined petroleum products pipeline and associated facilities in Cass County. This is located just east of Mapleton from I-94 north about 7 miles. The pipeline essentially runs from Senex's existing Laurel pipeline to NuStar's existing Nor System pipeline, and it will provide Senex with greater refined product supply optionality through the use of NorthStar's Nor System pipeline. The project will also enable NuStar to more efficiently distribute diesel fuel and gasoline within the state of North Dakota, and the additional supply from Senex's Laurel pipeline will enable NuStar to take more gasoline and diesel fuel off the North System pipeline at Jamestown terminals to meet increased demand in North Dakota, while still continuing to fill refined petroleum product customer needs downstream at NuStar's Morehead, Sauk Center, and Roseville terminals. So this is a refined product, so gas and diesel pipeline expansion out in Cass County. And it'll be a pleasure to be going east for a pipeline hearing in the next couple of months.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Madam Chair, I would just offer that I've contacted North Dakota State University, and they have rooms for us to have our hearing. So we could have it right on campus at NDSU. We could invite some of the student groups to watch a hearing process.
And I think that's a cool idea.
It wasn't necessarily mine, but somebody fed it to me. But I think it's a good idea.
Okay.
We did at the power line hearing up in UND. We did it at the law school. We could do something at NDSU and invite the political science folks and invite the natural resources folks and their engineers and see all of it. I think that would be a good opportunity for the students to see what we do, because I've seen a lot of the students actually that I taught, I've seen now out in the field working for different engineering companies or different NRM companies. So if we're all interested, I think that'd be a good place to do it.
I think that's a great idea. We had originally talked about West Fargo, but I don't know how far we are down that path. I think that's definitely worth doing. Good.
All right. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. Thank you for that idea, Brian. And that concludes my portfolio. So, Commissioner Crisman.
I have two agenda items. RC1, I move the commission close out contract number AM-729-15 with Gary Morlock Construction Incorporated for completion of reclamation work on the 2015 Columbus Phase 15 AML project.
Second.
On May 27th of this year, the commission entered into a contract with Gary Morlock Construction of Bismarck. And this project involved the elimination of nearly 5,000 feet of high walls at two abandoned surface mines up in Burke County. About 255,000 cubic yards of spoil material was used to backfill the high walls, and about 65 acres were reclaimed at the two sites. The original contract with Morlock was in the amount of $528,150. All work under this contract has now been satisfactorily completed, and the ML division recommends the contract be closed. The earthwork at the site started on July 11th and was completed August 21st, so they really had a nice quick turnaround. Seeding operations and straw wattles placement were completed on September 9th. Project manager Mark Cannell and Inspector Preston Ripplinger inspected the work throughout the project. They determined that all the work and conditions of the contract were satisfactorily completed. The contractor has certified that all employees, subcontractors, and suppliers used for this project have been paid. The final invoice was submitted and paid. The contracted work was completed for a total of $477,125, or over $51,000 less than the original contract amount. So that's certainly good news that Morlock Construction was able to complete that well and under budget.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Again, RC2, I move the commission adopt an order in case number AU-15-688, granting the request for certification to Kentucky Auction Academy of Bowling Green, Kentucky, as an approved auction school is required under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-08-01-01.
Second.
Under that section of Administrative Code, an auction school must apply to the commission to have its courses of study approved for use by our North Dakota auctioneers. In October, the Kentucky Auction Academy filed a request for certification as an approved school. To be approved, a course of study must meet three general criteria. First of all, they must require students to complete at least 60 hours of study in the presence of school instructors, with at least 40 of those hours under the supervision of a licensed auctioneer with at least 5 years' experience. Secondly, they must provide instruction in ethics, bid calling, sales management, advertising, contracts, accounting and bookkeeping, real estate, appraisals, closing statements, license law, uniform commercial codes, tax collection, bulk sales, and firearms. And third, they must maintain a grading system that permits the issuance of diplomas or certificates only to students who successfully demonstrate competence in all required areas of study. The auction school must provide the commission with a copy of the test instruments and grading standards used to determine student competence. Contrary to popular belief, there is not a fourth section that says they have to be able to talk really fast. Those are the three. The Kentucky Auction Academy exceeds the required hours. Their program provides 80 hours of instruction in the specific areas of study relating to the auction business. In addition, the school uses a grading system that permits the issuance of diplomas to students who successfully demonstrate competence in all required areas of study. Staff recommends the commission certify Kentucky Auction Academy as an approved auction school.
All right, we have a motion and a second to further discussion. Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Sold. Includes my agenda. Sold.
I knew there was a joke there somewhere.
And the title of an auctioneer?
I don't know.
No idea.
Colonel.
Really?
Really?
I didn't know what that word was yesterday either. You're expanding my vocabulary. What was that word yesterday? Carrion?
Oh, yeah.
I'd never heard that before.
Carrion?
Yeah.
Dead carrion animals.
I just call them dead animals.
That's pretty clear. No one's going to be confused by that. But they won't be impressed either. Carrion would be impressive. All right, Commissioner Culp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I start with my regular scheduled agenda, I wanted to highlight, I should have done it during discussion, but consent BK4. Dave, you asked the question, I think, the last meeting about if we'd heard anything about streetlights being swapped out. We actually received a filing that XL wants to modify their tariff basically so they can swap out some of their existing lights and put in the new ones, that new LED lights. So what that requires is we suspend the tariff, staff will review it, we'll also go through it. But basically, in what I've seen so far, the company indicates that cities in North Dakota served by companies are interested in LED lighting options. No cities would have to convert any lights to LED lamps, but if the cities choose to, they certainly can, and they would experience the individual 4 to 5% savings in electricity. They claim the lights are better at night. You can see better. So I think we'll certainly review this with staff as the three of us and put this out there. But I think when we talked before, we weren't exactly sure exactly what the filing was. Now we've seen the filing. And just like I think I said before, one of the things that we might want to see what staff digs out is the useful life of the existing lights, how that might swap out. But it certainly looks like something that they're trying to do to save some energy and get some better lights. And I guess that would include Fargo, Grand Forks, Minot for sure, and maybe even some of the smaller towns that Thompson comes to mind that have these lights. So just want to follow up on our question before. Item BK1. I move the commission deem the amendments to application complete and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Montana Dakota Utility Companies / Otter Tail Power Companies 345 KV Transmission Line, Dickey County Siting Application, case number PU13-840.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In July of 2014, the commission issued corridor certificate number 154 and route permit 166 to MDU and Otter Tail to construct approximately 11 miles of 345 KV line in the Ellendale area, basically connect from Ellendale 11 miles south into South Dakota as part of a larger project. The commission approved that route, and what we've seen now is the company is requesting a slight modification in sections 9 and 10 of the route, which is really, we've got a map that we can show you, but right as it comes out of the Ellendale substation, they want to do the permitted route is a 90-degree angle, but the landowner wants them to go diagonal a little bit, so it certainly seems reasonable. Quite honestly, I thought we might see a route modification where it entered into South Dakota, but it looks like just where it comes out of the sub. So there's anyone who requests a hearing on this has until December 8th to do so. Otherwise, we can handle this ourselves in an informal or maybe even just vote on it. So everything certainly appears to be in order, and I'm glad to see they're moving forward on this line because it's a critical transmission line.
Do we have a motion, a second, or further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission adopt the finding of fact, conclusion of law and order, and Montana Dakota Utility Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., natural gas rate increase application case number PU15-90.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. All right, I'll take a few minutes to go through this, but I suspect my colleagues will have some comments and there'll be some questions, so I'll hit some of the highlights. In February of this year, MDU filed an application to increase its rates for natural gas. What's the next word? Natural gas distribution service to provide an additional 2015 test year annual revenues of approximately $4.3 million, or a 3.4% increase of revenue expected from current rates. In March 11th of this year, the commission approved the request for interim rate for the company, and the interim rate increase was about $4.3 million, effective April 7th of 2015. Also in March of this year, the commission issued a notice of public input sessions and notice of hearing. The public input sessions were scheduled for April 13th and April 14th, and the initial formal hearing was scheduled for July 20th. It also encouraged folks that wanted to intervene to do so by June 1st of 2015. The public input sessions were held as scheduled via interactive television, and we were personally at some of the sites in Bismarck, Devils Lake, Dickinson, Minot, Valley City, and Williston. In May of this year, advocacy staff and MDU filed an agreement for an extension of the rate suspension to November 30th in order to accommodate rescheduling of the formal hearing August 31st. So May 27th, we issued a rescheduled hearing to begin August 31st. In the meantime, petitions to intervene were filed by the AARP and the federal executive agencies. And on July 6, 2015, the administrative law judge granted the petitions to intervene of AARP and federal executive agencies. I think everyone's familiar with who AARP is, but the federal executive agencies, just to give a little more detail, basically that would be the Air Force Base in Minot, any of the post offices that MDU serves, veteran service officers, the IRS. Basically, anyone that may have a GSA contract is probably the best way to explain who the federal executive agencies are. quite honestly, we'd seen AARP be involved in many of our rate cases before, but we'd never seen, or I'd never seen, the federal executive agencies intervene. So certainly they felt they had standing, and of course the judge agreed with them, so they were granted intervention. In August 26th this year, federal executive agencies AARP filed a settlement agreement with MDU and also our advocacy staff to resolve all issues in the proceeding except that AARP objected to the portion of the agreement relating to rate design. So we were offered a settlement agreement that everyone agreed with except for AARP didn't agree with the rate design. They agreed on the overall cost, but they didn't agree on how that cost should be spread out. Kind of jumping around a little here, but one of the big things of the settlement agreement that really changed was the initial request by MDU was for $4.3 million, and the settlement agreement settled in at $2.5 million. So there was a significant decrease in what MDU asked for in the beginning to what they agreed at the settlement. And quite honestly, we looked at the $2.5 million in our proceedings, and MDU, I think, could best speak to some of the things that they offered up as part of that, but it was some rate design changes and some other things. But that was a significant decrease, which we initially filed. But nevertheless, we went through the hearing, of course, and all the parties agreed that the cost was appropriate. So it doesn't mean we don't ask the hard questions during the hearing. But it was interesting how the only point of real contention was how we distributed the rates. One of the things that I will say is that there was a class cost of survey prepared by MDU, basically trying to talk about who was the cost causer and who should be paying for it. And the class cost of service study, one thing I want to make clear from my viewpoint, it's a useful guide. It's something you can use as a guide to how you distribute rates and how you may use other factors that come into play. But I don't think it should be used as the cost of service. Here we go. I'm an auctioneer now, Randy. The cost of service study, if it says 1, 2, 3, it doesn't mean necessarily the commission should do 1, 2, 3. There's other factors that come into play. But in this case, I thought it was an excellent guide that we used when we allocated the cost, because as we came down to it, really what one of the things that became interesting was that, AARP wanted those costs to be spread, with all the way through all the different services. The federal executive agencies, they felt that they've been paying more over the years than they should have because of the way the costs were allocated in previous years. And the class cost of service study really showed that out, that the federal agencies were paying more than other agencies according to what they should be. And so one of the things that the three of us spent a lot of time with was, how should we do that? Should the cost of service study actually showed that we should be decreasing the costs of the Air Force, I shouldn't say the Air Force, so the federal agencies, if you try to true up the real cost causer to what the fees are going to be. And quite honestly, that's what this order settles in today, that really the groups that will be experienced the increase are the residential customers will get a increase. The firm general will hold. Air Force will go down 1.6%. Small interruptibles will go up about 6.7%. And the large interruptibles will hold, which means the overall about 1.96% for the system of MDU, which equals out to the $2.5 million that MDU will be authorized to cover their appropriate costs. So I'm sure we'll have more questions on that. But for me, it really was a move in the right direction to true up what the cost of who causes it, who should be paying for it. And the Air Force, the federal executive agencies, have paid more than their fair share for years. And these are previous policy decisions that the commissions have made to do that. And I think what this order does today is begins the shift back to levelizing those costs to who causes it should be paying for it. So that's why I support the order today. There also was one other, I would consider, major change that was done. When you figure out the cost of services, you've got your basic service charge, which was fixed before at about $15 a month, and you also have the distribution delivery charge. One of the things that also became central here is the company requested to remove the distribution delivery charge and put it all into the basic service charge. In the previous rate cases, we've made moves to also true that up to be more of, whether you use, one decatherm of gas or, 2,000 decatherms of gas, you pay the same basic delivery charge. And so that's where we ended up is here as well. We removed the distribution delivery charge, and we increased the basic service charge from $15 to $19.60 per month. And now we're going to hear a lot of people, I'm sure they're going to complain about that, saying that's not fair. And I don't see it that way at all. I see it that's a truing up of costs that, quite honestly, everyone that uses a system should pay the same to use that system, whether you run your barbecue grill 1 month a year or whether you do it every day out there. So that's where that fixed charge is out there, to cover those fixed costs. So there's some big reasons, I think, that I've changed some of my viewpoints on this over the last few years, because looking at more detailed into the data, I think that when you look at it, this provides an incentive that utility benefits are separated from sales volume. So they're not interested in sales so much, because they get their basic charge, which covers their costs. So that would actually, in me, encourage more of energy efficiency for the company, because you decouple sales volume with what they actually need to run their business. It eliminates any disincentives for the utility to promote conservation among residential customers. Also, the residential billing is simplified. Your removal of both the distribution delivery volumetric charges and the distribution delivery stabilization mechanism. So the bill becomes a lot more simple. It becomes you pay your basic charge, but whatever you use for the gas. Also, seasonal differences in utility revenues and customer bills are stabilized. And what I mean by that is that if you pay a basic charge of $19.60 per month, you're going to be paying that through the summer when you're June, July, August, even though you may not be using a lot of gas, but that's going to level out your bills. So the spikes that you may see in December, January, February, the spikes won't be so high, because in the summer you're paying a little bit. So you'll see less complaints in the winter for these big bill swings. Xcel Energy has had a fixed charge for quite a while, and I think it's really helped out, because once the customers get used to that, it's almost like it's not a balanced billing, but it is a move to that way where you pay those costs all throughout the year. So I think, to me, that was also a big reason to support this. And I think it kind of ties in there, but the impact of significantly colder than normal weather in the customer bills is lessened. And the last thing I'd say on that point is that when you look at the bill, 71% of your cost is the actual gas itself. So if a customer wants to save, they just use less gas, and because 71% of the bill comes from the actual sale of the gas. So that's a big reason why I think the shift to increase that to basic service charge covers the cost. A couple more details, I think, and then I'll just turn it over to my colleagues for their comments. The average customer will receive an increase of approximately $2.03 per month going forward. If this settlement is adopted, which I'm encouraging my colleagues to support, there will be a refund of approximately $7, which will be issued as a bill credit, because the interim rates were based on $4.3 million and the final amount roughly $2.6 million. So there'll be a refund of approximately $7 for the average customer. And I think I'll also address it now, too, is that when I talked about the average increase for the average customer, there will be some customers that might see different amounts. If you're a very small user, like I said, if all you do is use your natural gas to do your grill in the summer, well, then you're going to see more than $2.03 increase, because you're using a very small amount of gas, but you're having that service available to you all the time. Well, but you should be paying for that. That's why I'm supporting this. Now, the average customer is going to see the same kind of bill, because it's an offset. You'll pay more in the summer for the basic charge, but you'll pay less in the winter because those costs are incorporating the basic charge, not those other distribution charges. So I think this was a very good process. We had ARP intervene, and they made their case, I think, very well. Federal executive agencies intervened, they made their cases very well. I think at the end it was a decision that we came to that I think supports really we're going to have a company that is required or allowed to return the appropriate costs, and also we're going to have a system in place that's reliable and keeps the gas flowing to where it needs to go to. So, Madam Chair, that's my long comments on this, but I think this order is very appropriate.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Well, I'll just take a real brief moment to, I think, commend the advocacy group as well as the interveners for working with our advisory staff and with MDU to minimize the increase, to make sure that the resources are there for the company in order to continue providing the services that we're counting on, but to minimize the increase. And also, I think that, you mentioned this, but I just want to reemphasize it, elimination of those extra charges, and specifically I'm talking about the distribution delivery charge and the distribution delivery stabilization mechanism. I think that is going to make for a simpler and more transparent billing statement, which the consumers deserve, and which I think will do a lot to enhance the understandability of the bills.
I'll also just add a couple things. I think, Brian, you mentioned some important points I want to emphasize again, a couple of them. First of all, the good news today is that most customers are already paying more than they need to, so they're going to see their rates go down from what they're currently paying because the interim rates are higher than what we're settling on. So that's the good news for today. Brian mentioned that the company is investing millions of dollars, $212 million of investments in the system this year alone. And I think that's why you didn't see any of the interveners objecting to the need for more revenues. So if the company is investing $212 million and they're asking for $2.5 million in additional revenues for customers, obviously most of the costs of their new investments are being covered by customer growth, and that's what we really want to see. And I was really pleased to see a pretty small, relatively small revenue request considering the size and the investments the company is making. So all the debate was over the mechanism, as Brian said. I wanted to just point out something and just to remind customers how common these basic service charges are. I went through especially when it comes to utilities, I went through all of my personal utility bills and looked at what kind of basic service charges I'm paying already. In AT&T, we pay $15 per phone, plus then we pay an additional charge for how much data and that sort of, how much we want to use of their system. CenturyLink, we pay $62.96 for voice and internet service. And then if you look at the City of Bismarck utility bill, you have a lot of basic service charges. Sewer charge, $23.72. Garbage charge, $12.31. Recycling charge, Randy's favorite, $3.81. These are basic service charges that customers pay to get the service. And then there's a use charge. The water charge in the utility bill from Bismarck is based on use. So this is a really common practice, and I think it's common because it recognizes that there are set fees, set charges, set costs that companies must pay to provide and connect service to customers and to bring the service to them. And I think that, that combined with the fluctuating charges on bills is a common way of recouping costs for utilities. And that's really what this decision today does with MDU. We're going to be charging for a basic charge to the customer's home, and then their use will be reflected in their cost of gas. And so there was a lot of discussion in the proceedings, and we've been working on this for a number of months, about who are the winners and the users. And there was we talked extensively about this, and there was a lot of assumptions that are made in those discussions. You talk about, there's some assumed that the small users who are living in a small home would, under this scenario, be paying for the users in a large home who use a lot. But then there's a lot of contradictory information out there that suggests actually the people who are in a small home probably haven't been able to afford the energy-efficient windows and highly efficient furnaces, the new insulation, roofs, all of these new energy efficiency products that make their home more efficient and use less gas compared to the new home. So we can't assume that a person in a big home uses more than a person in a small home. And I think that that's something that really came through. It could be very likely that an elderly customer living on a fixed income in a small home could be subsidizing today somebody who is just hooking up for gas service for their grill or to heat their garage in the back. And that's not appropriate either. So this really eliminates that scenario. We analyze the customer use patterns extensively, and the reality is the vast majority of the customers fall into the 75 to 95 dekatherm per month use, and that's the break-even point for the new method and the previous method. So in other words, they'll pay essentially the same either way. It's also interesting to note, because we had a lot of talk about the elderly and that population group, It's interesting to note that anyone living in an apartment, a nursing home, a retirement community, assisted living community is not impacted by this because those centralized communities charge their customers. They get paid, billed by the tenant, and then they bill the customers through there. So this mechanism will not be impacting those folks in those living scenarios. So these facts also combined with the fact that we've done this almost 10 years ago with XL and it's worked out quite well. We don't hear any complaints anymore from folks. And initially there were, a number of complaints, but it really tapered off. Really assures me that this is a reasonable approach and appropriate to implement at this time.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl. Item BK3. I move the commission suspend the filing, assess a filing fee of $10,000, and issue a notice opportunity for hearing in Northern State Power Company's Transmission Facility Cost Recovery 2016 rates, case number PU15-684.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In February of 2014, the Public Service Commission issued an order approving a transmission cost recovery TCR rider pursuant to North Dakota Century Code, basically for allowing them to recover costs for transmission projects that they are paying the appropriate share for North Dakota, resulting in a rate of 0.002332 per kilowatt. The average impact would actually decrease the cost of service $0.13 for a typical residential customer without electric space heating using 750 kilowatts per month. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by December 8th of this year, and if no one requests a hearing, we can do this in a informal. One thing I will say that we just had a long discussion about a rate increase of $2.03. We had public input sessions, we had hearings, and did all this work, which is very appropriate. But one thing that I'm becoming more and more aware of and more concerned about is the cost of transmission costs to North Dakota customers. That's why we're heavily involved in MISO. That's why we're heavily involved in SPP. But while this motion today talks about a decrease of, you know, basically 13 cents, the initial cost was $1.75 a month was a transmission rider. So this is the way the riders for transmission are handled, that you get a cost initially of $1.75 that you basically just do through a rider, and we have the appropriate discussion on it. But I think there's costs coming at customers that aren't seen nearly as much as a basic cost of service. Now, this is electricity. I understand we're talking about gas, but I think the commission, I think we're doing a very good job of staying on top of these transmission costs. What I'm getting at is there's things that come our way, such as these transmission costs, that are determined by MISO, that are determined by SPP, that then we're fed to us, that we really have to look through them. But if we don't agree with them, then there's some challenges. We could reject it. Then what happens? Then the FERC would probably look at who's got jurisdiction to do what. So what I'm getting at here is I want to thank the legislature for allowing us the extra person, if you will, not the extra person, the additional person to help us in SPP. But we've got to stay heavily involved in MISO and SPP when we go through all these cost allocation discussions, because that's where the true discussion and decisions are made, which allows us to, you know, figure out what the cost is going to be. So for this year, I think our folks have done a good job. We've got a good mechanism in place. We're actually going to decrease the cost if we approve this and if appropriate. But what I'm getting at is we can't lose sight of the ball as a commission and as a state of what's going on around us for transmission costs. So it's not only the Clean Power Plan. There's lots of things that are out there. And there may be a significant build-out of transmission tied into the Clean Power Plan that we would get the one cost of what it would cost for new generation, then we get the additional cost of new transmission that might have to be built. So kind of my soapbox a little bit here, but this order, I think this motion is certainly appropriate, and we'll sort through it. But I wanted to highlight my growing concern about cost of transmission to North Dakota customers.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. And last but certainly not least, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Thunder Spirit Wind LLC, Montana Dakota Utility Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., transfer of site certificate, siting application, case number PU15-592.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In August of 2014, the commission issued a first amended certificate of site compatibility number 35 to Thunder Spirit Wind LLC, authorizing construction of a 150-megawatt Thunder Spirit Wind Energy project in Adams County. Also in, well, I guess this year, June of 2015, there was two cases. The commission issued an advanced determination of prudence and a certificate of public convenience and necessity to MDU, a division of MDU Resources, authorizing purchase of Thunder Spirit Wind Energy projects. So the commission has already, quite honestly, given our thoughts to MDU about them acquiring this wind project, but what this does today is actually transfer the site certificate. So anyone requesting a hearing has until December 8th to do so. I won't call this a formality by any means because people have the right to say their piece, and we may want a hearing ourselves, but we've already issued an ADP on this as well as granted the PCNN.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Madam Chair, that concludes my portfolio.
All right. Well, we'll look ahead here on the calendar and talk about a couple things. We are getting together next week with NSP for a periodic information exchange meeting, talking through the Clean Power Plan again, some of their some things that they're working on in Fargo and a number of other issues with them, I think, in additional to their integrated resource plan. We also have a work session on alternative grain bond filing. That's going to be interesting. I look forward to that discussion about some of our customers have asked for alternative ways to post a bond, and so we're going to be looking at that. We'll be meeting with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, talk about how we can work together with them more effectively on and incorporate their input on our siting hearings on a number of issues, including eagles. And then that takes us through the month of November. So with that, I will open it up to any questions.
As a point of just clarification, what does Xcel customer pay in the basic charge?
Ooh, basic service charge for
$18 comes to mind for some reason.
18?
I think 18 comes to mind. That's what I was thinking right away. I thought 1810 or 1860. We can double check, Dave.
But Otter Tail do not. Well, Otter Tail doesn't have gas.
Right.
Who are MDU's biggest users? In other words, who's used the most gas?
They're large.
Industrial or residential?
Their large industrial group, I would think, would be their biggest user. We've got MDU reps right here that can give you those. It came out, there's seven of them that.
And the question I had, too, was if this is being done in your press release to cover the cost of investments, where is that growth coming from, commercial or residential?
Well, I think that what you have, you've got a large amount of residential growth in western North Dakota as well as Bismarck. They're growing everywhere. And in the industrial load, I guess you look at different areas coming in, I think you see it across the board.
But do we know the breakdown? Is there a specific breakdown?
I'm sure we can get you the exact breakdown of where the growth has been. Because that was one of the questions, that why should a customer in Bismarck pay for growth in northwest North Dakota?
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
I think the system continues to grow.
Industrial growth specifically.
When you get a new customer coming in, let's say, for example, a housing development comes in, MDU won't just pay all the costs of that development. The developer has to pay X amount of dollars, and the company will pay some. And over time, as more people come in, then that cost will come back to MDU, if you will, or the recoup will come back. So when you get a new industrial customer coming in, they don't just hook up for free. They've got to put up some serious money. And over time, then those costs
I understand that, but just wanted to make that clear, you know, if that was part of the decision.
Well, James, here's how, if I might offer a little bit more in addition to what Commissioner Kalk has already said, which is I totally agree with. I've got my list of some of their major investments here that they put in. Four new town border stations. Those serve everybody, industrial and residential. Distribution mains to support the systems. And a second phase of the Williston Loop. Those are some of their major new investments. So they take the costs and of the system as a whole, And then how you determine who pays is you look at what people are already paying and how much of a percent, how that contributes to the cost of the system.
Sure, I understand.
And that, and so that's how, you know, so it isn't just like residential growth, so residential customers should pay for it. It's the cost of the system as a whole and how you distribute those costs. And so what we found in this is they're investing in the system as a whole, investments that everybody is using. But the large industrial customers are already paying, contributing like 12% to the system versus a residential that's contributing 4% return on investment. So, well, let me grab that list.
Well, if you're looking...
Do you have that, Brian?
Yeah, the residential basically 6.7% or 6.9%, firm general 7.74%, Air Force 33%, small interruptible 5.8%. Large interruptible 11.5. So when you look at the class cost of service, that's how you break out who's paying for some of this stuff.
At the end, in the end. Yeah. But not currently. I mean, prior to that settlement, though, the residential was 4.7% and large interruptible 10.5%, contributing to the consistent.
Sorry.
Those are...
One of seven customers. They got seven big customers that they're out there. And they could give you the list. I don't know what seven it is, but I remember the seven.
But you said the Minot Air Force Base would go down 1.6%. Is that?
The federal agencies would go down in their monthly bill, if you will. I'll look here again, 1.63%. And the reason that is because prior to this case, 55.86 was their what they were actually paying for their fair share. Now, that number figured we need to bring down because they were paying more than their fair share. And that's where
the
residential
federal agencies or large industrial private users as well.
It is the federal executive agencies. This one is just for the Air Force. But you've got the federal executive agencies who intervene on behalf of all of their customers, which is basically the GSA contract.
But how this shakes down, will all industrial users, including the government, will they see level, correct? No increase at all or down? Would that be correct?
I don't think I'm understanding your question, or I'll need to communicate a little better here. Well, there'll be an increase.
Design breakdown, I don't think we ever actually heard what the percentage for residential customers would go up. It was talked about 3.3%
okay.
In the last meeting. That's kind of what I was looking for.
What we have is an overall increase for the customer, for all of MDU, an overall increase of 1.96%.
Got it.
Giving you the revenue required. And when you look at that overall increase, what we're actually increasing is the residential cost will increase by 3.34% or $2.2 million. So the residential customers will increase 3.34%, given that $2.2 million. The firm general will stay at zero. The Air Force delivery will actually go down about $40,000 is what they pay in, which is the negative 1.63%. Your small interruptible customers, their rate will go up 6.78%, which is roughly $340,000, and our large interruptibles will hold steady at zero. And so one of the things that, quite honestly, AARP argued for is that why should you raise the residential rate 3.35% and not raise firm general or large interruptible, and why would you give the Air Force a decrease? Well, the reason you would do that because the cost of service, those groups that we held at zero and reduced were already paying more than their fair share. And so this is a true-up of...
Does this get them back to an even...
It does not. It moves
it... So they're still paying more?
That's a good question. Let me make sure I understand. Answer this correctly. This does not get it back to equal because when you look at the final numbers, the residential is right there. The residential still shows a difference in the amounts.
They're under.
The rate of return for residential after this will be 6.94%. The rate of return from the Air Force is 33.57%. And the rate of return from large interruptible is 10.58%. So
they're still basically
still a discrepancy.
Large interruptible and the Air Force are still paying an amount
right, still
that provides a disproportionate rate of return.
Residential ratepayers, would that
correct.
Be correct?
That would be a fair statement. That's a previous policy decision that laid out the rates that way, where the goal today is to move it back to true cost and
closer to.
Yeah,
and you base this on MDU's own
class cost of service study. And like I said in my comments, I think it's a very useful guide, but there are other things that will come into play down the road. So this shouldn't be that from here on out that someone provides a cost of service study, that'll be the benchmark that we will use. We had significant discussion about how to do that. And actually, the going to the increase in the fixed charge, that was a big decision as well, too, to eliminate some of the discrepancies in the bill, if you will. So I think it's a good decision that we got to. And the there's going to be groups that say, why should the residential rate go up 3.34% and the other ones hold even? Well, we've got to get the whole story out because they weren't paying their fair share.
That large interruptible group, too, is an important one to consider in a little bit different way because they, by virtue of being large interruptible, that means they have backup service available so they can be interrupted. If you raise it too high, there's a max amount that the company can charge a customer like that before they just bail and choose their alternative source because it's cheaper. And so the company felt that they were just about at the max at those rates for the large interruptibles, where if you push it much more, they're going to lose those folks because their alternative source, their backup generation, would be cheaper than what they can get from MDU. So it's almost like that. It's a negotiated, or what do we call that in the hearing? It's an agreement. It's like a negotiated rate with the company.
Thank you.
And just the firm general and the small interruptibles, who comprises those rate groups?
You know, Mike, we're going to have to give you some. If you want
so
a detailed
hard,
breakdown, because I think it'd be
you guys today.
Well, it's just
there's really easy way to define all these. The firm general are largely small businesses,
but there'll be some small businesses that maybe don't fall into that category.
They might be small interruptible or firm general. Small interruptible mean that they're smaller businesses with a backup service. Interruptible means they can be kicked off, so they pay a lower rate. Then they usually have to have something to replace their power supply with, their gas supply. So they have to have another alternative source. But firm general is business folks generally.
Very off the wall question: is the capital large interruptible?
MDU.
I'm curious.
Are we firm general? See, now even the MDU people are stumped. I mean, come on.
But if you'd like a breakout of, if you gentlemen would like a breakout of who's in what category, that's something we certainly can provide. We know the answer. We just don't have it right here.
And then the refund will be credited on the February 2016 bills. When will the actual increase, the $2.03 per month on average, start to show up?
Well, actually, what you'll see is you'll see a decrease in what they're paying right now because the interim rate is higher than the final rate. So what month is it now? It's November. I think we have the next billing cycle after this order when this will start. They'll get in the queue. So
that's when it will take effect.
Yeah. So it'll take time for the thing to cycle itself through, but it will not be an increase of $2.03. It'll actually be a decrease.
Initially.
And it'll level out at $2.03 for the average user. Now, there will be some users that they'll see a larger than $2.03 increase. If you're just a very, very small user that uses it just for your barbecue grill in the back or your garage heater. So, yes, there will be more phone calls coming our way, and we'll be explaining this for a while. But the average user is going to level out to a levelized billing. They'll pay a little bit more in the summer, and they'll pay less in the winter for their basic – well, the basic charge will stay the same, but their bills will level out, if you will.
What's the thought behind approving these interim increases, and coming back and fixing them? It's pretty common.
It's a legislative decision. The legislature, the companies went in before I got here and basically made their case, and maybe then it was Senator Crispin, but basically said we want the ability to have interim rates. And based on what had been approved in previous rate cases, we do the magic and come up with the number for interim rates, and then we go through the rate case and work it out. I think interim rates are a good idea. because
well, those are always granted.
Well, they're requested based on previous approval. So yes, I would say there always will be some interim rate. But to follow on the question, I think they are a good idea because it allows us, like we extended this a little bit more time so staff could have more time to prepare their case. There's no pressure coming to us to get this at a certain date. We want to make sure we get a good outcome, and then we go forward with it. But before, without interim rates, the companies were falling more and more behind on what they would what the rate shock would be at the end. So this really does two things. It gives us full time to do it, as well as that when the final rates are approved, think about the rate shock that might be coming now if this had been building for the last 7 months.
The other thing that I would want to add to that is, you know, in the interest of transparency and a really good, fair hearing process, this is an important part of making sure that those two things are accomplished. If not for that, you know, I think there would be a likelihood for a utility company to come in here and say, you know, we need this, and for the commission to want to hurry up and move things along quickly because you have a provider out there, you want them putting investment out, and so we would hurry the process. This allows us to take our time, make sure that there's transparency, that we can have the public notices and give plenty of time for response and that sort of thing, leave lots of time for comments and all that. In the meantime, the company has some of the resources they need to make those investments. But at the end of the day, we've had a transparent, really, really all-encompassing hearing that allows us to reach the best decision.
This 4.3, and Commissioner Conk said this, it's a significant decrease of what was asked. And the magic that you looked at, I mean, that's a
When the company filed their initial request for $4.3 million, advocacy staff went through and looked at it, basically saying, okay, this is what we think the interim rate should be based on your previous rate case, what type of costs that had been approved. If there's new costs in there, they're not included in interim rates. So that would they make a filing to us, and we look at it and say, yeah, that seems appropriate. We suspend the rates, and then we go forward. And so in the deliberation, we had folks intervene. The federal executive agencies intervened. AARP intervened. Advocacy staff got working. And so these four groups came up with a settlement agreement that reduced the cost from $4.3 million to $2.3 million. So that's where a lot of the intense negotiation would have taken place. Then they file a settlement agreement with us for $2.3 million. All the intervener parties agree. Advocacy staff agrees.
2.6, you mean?
I'm going to go back and look again.
Okay. But yeah.
What is it, Julie?
The revenue?
Yeah, you just whispered into me.
I thought it was 2.5.
2.6 million, 1.96%. So they come back and they all agree on the total cost, mm-hmm. but they disagree on how to allocate the cost. So that becomes the focal point of the hearing. So, but I think it's very appropriate to do that. That's the process as it lays out.
Does the commission keep a running tally, say, over the past 10 years of what the increases have been?
Absolutely. We could show you from the last 10 years the increases for. Now, if you're going to ask me those off the top of my head, I'm not going to have them.
Well, you mean for MDU? You. Mm-hmm. We increased it last year by 3%. And then before that, it had been at least, I think, 10 years since they'd had a rate increase.
So the 3% increase last year was the first time in 10 years?
In a number.
Rates had gone
MDU,
up.
How many years?
I think we need
that?
To be careful before we.
Was it,
yeah,
Mark,
so
was it 2004?
In 2004.
And then 3% last year? And then this increase now. Is that correct?
Was last year's around 3%?
It was around
4. Oh, was it 4%?
I think we should be very careful of quoting numbers until we exactly know what we have. And
yeah.
I'd be happy to have our folks.
On the actual, but, I mean, my point is it hasn't been annual rate increases. There
sure.
was a 10-year
sure.
gap.
Sure, to put that in perspective, that's exactly
yeah.
it, yeah. But we can get that.
Absolutely. And we have electricity, is if you want to look at those. I mean, there's been a – what you've really seen is North Dakota hasn't had much build-out until the last few years. And with that build-out, you have increased rate cases, whether it's gas or electric.
Here's another challenge. Commissioner Crispin, how many auction schools are licensed by the Public Service Commission? Just kidding. I'm just curious.
All of them.
That's a good one, Brian.
Approximately a dozen. But this will be the only one that I'm aware of in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Anything else? Any other questions? You got everything you need? If there's anything that's still not clear, I think Mike's looking at that right now, and he'll be back with that. If there's anything unclear as you move forward, don't hesitate to call. Brian's the portfolio holder.
You should come by more often, Jim. I love the banter. This is good.
I get paid.
Every 2 weeks, 10 o'clock, right here.
All right.
How to stick it in town.
Okay, we will close.
Closing comments, Andy.
Oh, closing comments.
Field Marshal. Just say it.
I have no closing comments.
I do. This conversation has provided a perfect backdrop for a point that I want to make. And I know we've been talking about a gas rate increase, but whether it's gas or electricity, right now I'm going to talk about energy rate increases and the impact that they have. We've just had a lot of dialogue following months of a very open and, I think, great interaction hearing process. And what most of the discussion has boiled down to is the residential rate increase that's going to average, as we said, $2.03 a month. I don't know what the highest that a residential service is going to increase on this, but a few dollars. And we've had all this discussion. At the same time, we're looking at the future implementation. Hopefully it's stopped, but the potential future implementation of the Clean Power Plan. The EPA estimates in there about $30 a ton is going to be the cost of that reduction in CO2. While the EPA also estimated that North Dakota's reduction would need to be about 11%. When it was done, it turned out to be 45%. So their initial estimates aren't so hot. I'm thinking that $30 is going to go up by several times before it's all done. But using their number of $30 times the number of tons that this requires us to eliminate, we're talking about roughly $375 million. Oh, and one more thing with the gas rate increase we were just talking about. That was per meter, and in many cases, that meter services several people. Not always, but many times. The $375 million divided by our census population comes out to almost $50 per person per month. And like I said, I think you'll see that go up exponentially before it's ever finished. And so all this discussion over a few dollars. And I think it's important to emphasize that what the president has dropped on us here, and that we're working on trying to figure out how to handle, and then how the energy companies are working on trying to handle, is going to be an increase that makes this look like nothing to even consider. That is going to be that sizable. So with this discussion of energy price increases, I just didn't want to leave that hanging. Thank you.
Very good. Good point, Randy. I agree. May look like peanuts.
I mean, that is the elephant in the room that must not be ignored.
Any closing comments from you?
Just thank you, gentlemen, from the media coming by all the time, because it helps us get our story out. It makes us better, and it really helps us get the word, because, you know, we are here to serve the public, and it really helps us when you help us get out what's really going on all different sides. So I appreciate you guys always coming by.
Very good. We will adjourn until...
And the blue shirts everybody wears.
11:15 when we will take up the admin portion of the meeting.